This podcast was recorded in July 2016, just after Eileen Munro had made the social work news by talking about hot desking.
Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so that people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. Hello, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jo. And today, Jerry, we said we'd talk about the environment.
We did, which I think is a particular favourite topic of yours.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I'm really looking forward to thinking about both the context we work in and hot desking as well.
Excellent. Okay, so we had a look at the ethics of this, actually, and found that the International Federation of Social Workers Code of Ethics does talk about the environment. So it says that social workers have a duty to take necessary steps to care for themselves professionally and personally in the workplace so that they're able to provide appropriate service. And so if we think about our office space and the spaces in which we work, it's not just a question of having spaces that make us able to work well as a kind of professional responsibility, but also as a ethical responsibility. And if we think about the ecological kind of model, then, of course, we have ourselves at the centre, but around us we have another layer, which is the environment in which we operate. And because social work uses a lot of intellectual and emotional effort, we do need to be able to concentrate and have environments that will help us to do that and will help us to think and feel about our role in useful ways.
Yeah, well, when you start to talk about it, it reminds me of actually of an office that I once worked in. And I was, you know, having the normal pressured day that you do. And I went to make myself a cup of tea just to have that time, actually, to think. I often find a cup of tea helps you think. And I was standing there waiting for the kettle to boil. And I looked around for the first time. And the kitchen was a really negative place to be in, actually. It was filled with little sticky yellow notes saying, don't take my milk, this belongs to me, wash up, there's no fairy. And it was just full of kind of frustration, I guess, and anger. And it didn't feel like a very nice place to be. So I thought about it a lot during the day. And that evening when everyone went home, I went back into the kitchen and I took down all the little yellow notes and I got some spray and wipe and some cleaners, and I cleaned everything off and cleaned all the sticky tape and the old moldy blue tack. And I just got a picture of Van Gogh's sunflowers, a really nice big one. And I put it up where all the notes had been, because I really felt that if you could go and have your thinking time in a place where there was something beautiful, it would actually work out better for you. No one ever said anything, but no notes ever went back up there. And I think that I guess what I would say about that is that our environment really does affect us physically, psychologically, and socially. And another way to think about it is the old fish tank analogy, which I know that when I first mentioned it to you, you kind of thought, oh, I don't want to be stuck in a fish tank. And I think that's fair enough. But anyone out there, if you've ever kept fish, you will definitely know what I'm talking about, because fish are actually really easy to keep as long as you manage the environment. You don't have to train them. You don't have to take them for walks. You don't really have to do anything, but you have to keep the temperature right. You have to keep the environment right. And if you do that, the fish will thrive. They'll just do fish things all day. And for me, the problem comes when the environment overwhelms the fish. You know, the temperature's too great. There's pollution in the water. And this feels to me like what happens in social work sometimes. We become overwhelmed by our environment, and that really makes the atmosphere unbalanced, and it puts pressure on us to be able to perform well.
Yeah, so there's actually a lot of things about the environment that we could talk about, and we probably will have to come back to this topic a few more times. But yes, the things we thought we'd probably start with today were the atmosphere that we're working in and also the spaces. So starting off by thinking about the atmosphere, social work is complex. We've talked about that before, I think, and that's because it involves people, and there's a lot of unpredictable events, and we don't know what's going to happen with the families that we're working with, the people that we're working with from day to day, even our best informed evidence guess won't come up with all the things that could happen. So we do arrange our environments to help us deal with the unpredictable. So we have things like duty teams, we have rapid communications, we have quite a lot of things that are sort of set up for quick response. And that's quite helpful in terms of flexibility and helping us to be able to act quickly within complexity and make changes as things change around us. But we can end up with, I think, an overemphasis on unpredictability, and that influencing our working lives too much, because actually there are some predictable things and there are some things that need to be done in a calmer, less rapid response, less reactive kind of way, such as long reports, reflective discussions, those kind of things. And they get squeezed out if we're totally poised for the next crisis. And the other thing that we've talked about is that if there is a drama, if there is a crisis, something unpredictable happens, it can spread quite quickly. So an unexpected event kind of occurs, or there's an unusual referral and somebody is there to respond, but other people then get drawn in and they get drawn into the emotion as well. So we can end up with some of the some reaction spreading throughout the environment. And I think that's a lot of that is to do with genuine concern that people are caring and want to support. But also there is an element, I think, of natural curiosity in there. So we need to be quite focused about when it's appropriate for us to respond and how quickly it's appropriate for us to respond as well.
Yes, I think that's right, Jerry, because when you talk to people about how they're managing their time in the workday, they often bring up the issue of interruptions. And when you start to unpick exactly what is stopping them from working at that steady task, completing an assessment, really focusing, they actually identify their colleagues. You know, the interruptions come from each other. And I think that some of the unpredictability of social work will always remain. And I think that's one of the reasons we enjoy the work, you know, that it doesn't feel the same every day. You get opportunities to think differently. But we do have some control, and we have some influence about how we manage our work. We can arrange for there to be uninterrupted time if we negotiate with others. And it's about how we send those messages out and how we can be clear about what's urgent and what's not, when we're doing maintenance tasks, and really keeping an eye on how we're managing our time.
Yeah, and I think there's also, we talked about the issue of language, that some language can make you feel like there's more of a sense of crisis. So a lot of the common language in social work is about dramatic places like the battlefield. So we talk about the front line, we talk about being under siege or being bombarded with work. And so although we may not sometimes be able to control what comes into our environment, we can control the language that we use about it. And we looked at the root of the word crisis, and it's actually a Greek word meaning decision. So it doesn't necessarily mean panic. It can mean an opportunity to make a decision. It's an opportunity to choose a path. So I think some of the language that we use could be changed to be much more helpful, and we could think about progress and opportunity rather than threat or, you know, challenge.
And I think that managers can model a reflective response instead of jumping into action as well. So, you know, the most helpful manager I ever had was actually someone who slowed everything down and who was able to ask, what's happening, rather than what do you want to do? And that was really helpful. It allowed us to explore the situation and make a judgment based on our understanding rather than just our instinct. And I know that we've talked about this before, Jerry. You know, instinct is a great place to start. It's part of why we're paid, you know, is because we have good intuition. We have good, we're able to take our experiences and use them. But it's a really lousy place to stop. And I think that, you know, what you're wanting from managers, from senior staff, from your colleagues is pause and a chance to stop action and just to say, what's happening? What else could be happening? What is it that I could do? And what should I do? because they're not always the same things either, are they? Mm-hmm. And creating an environment that actually encourages thoughtfulness, I think, is very, very positive and useful.
Yeah, and before we get into the thorny topic of hot desking, I just want to come back to this idea of beauty in the environment. So social work environments do need to be functional. They need to be places where we can do the work. They could actually be beautiful as well, and it's not a necessarily a split between function and beauty. And there is a school of thought that a hypothesis that maybe social workers don't feel that comfortable with a beautiful environment because actually many of the people that we work with don't have that, and maybe either we underestimate the impact of the environment because we're used to places that aren't that beautiful, or maybe we think actually it's not that important. The important thing is the work. But actually a beautiful environment can help with reflection. It can inspire us, it can motivate us. And I think also it adds a sense of value to the work. So social workers working in light, bright, beautiful environments might feel more that the work they do is important and is valued. And so there is maybe a responsibility on us to try to create some of those environments for ourselves as well, to show the value that we have for the work that we're doing.
Yeah, I'd really second that, Jerry. And I think I didn't start to think about beauty in the environment until I listened to a TED talk from Bill Strickland, who built an arts and craft facility in Detroit for people who were on welfare or who'd lost their jobs through the steelworks. And one of the things that he says is people who are struggling with poverty and people who are out of work deserve fountains too. They deserve sunlight too. They deserve flowers and beautiful things too. And it really started to challenge me because actually I thought, yeah, it does lift your spirits. And although I'm not advocating us spending huge amounts of budget on pristine environments, we can actually keep our own environments clean, cheerful, and uplifting. And every office I've ever worked in, I've really striven to do that. That's one of the things that's been important to me. However, one of the things I think that people would talk about is the fact that there is a modern trend towards shared offices, hot desking, agile working. And you and I have talked about this a lot, and I agree with you. I think you can view them positively or negatively. They can be an opportunity for flexibility, a chance to engage with others. And I particularly like that idea of the fact that they expose you to other ideas so that you're not really rigid in your thinking. It's one of the best things about multi-agency working. But we do hear from practitioners that it can be isolating. We hear that agile working reduces people's sense of being part of a team, and that for managers it can be really hard to do timely, thoughtful interventions with workers right when they need them. Sometimes they can find it hard to even find each other, really. The Social Work Task Force in 2009 and other research before and since has identified that social workers need peer and managerial support, and sometimes those opportunities to be in the same places are limited by agile working. And as a team manager, I think, or as a senior practitioner and as a colleague, we need to be really mindful of that limitation, and we need to start proactively looking for opportunities to create places to meet with our peers, places to hold forums. We need to make sure that there's regular interaction, not only with our own group, which we know can lead to the danger of groupthink, but also that there's regular interaction with people who think differently from us, and that we can test our responses and reactions with a wide group. So we're trying to seek out opportunities to learn from other teams, professionals and agencies. And actually, I can't believe you're making me say this, but, you know, agile working is a way of doing that. And I think I've come to a place where when it's managed well and there's some real clarity around this is when our team gets together, these are spaces where you can work and be thoughtful. When those spaces are set out and owned and colonized and used properly, actually agile working can be a very stimulating experience.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the other thing that we've talked about is the reflection spaces, and no doubt we'll get more into that when we have our conversation in the second podcast, but for now I suppose it's really just highlighting that social work is dynamic. There's a lot of movement, and we do need sometimes to slow down and be still. And if you don't have a clear space to stop and rest or to meet with others, then it can be quite difficult. So we wanted to think about an exercise to help people think about their environment and to feel maybe more in control of it. So it's quite a simple exercise. You can use it in lots of different ways, and it's about separating out things we can change and influence from the things that we can't. So essentially what you do is draw a circle, which is your circle of control. Around the outside of that, you draw a circle of influence, and then you have a bigger area outside, which are the things that you can't control. And if you think about your environment, there are some things you can control in your environment. You may start off by thinking there's not very many of them, but there will probably be some. And there may well be other things that you can influence. So Jo talked about interruptions. We're not completely in control of interruptions, but we may well be able to influence how much people interrupt us, or when they interrupt us, or what they interrupt us about. And then there will be some things that are outside of our control. So, for example, we may have an assigned place that we need to come into work. We may have particular kinds of furniture, we might have particular kinds of equipment, and so there's possibly little that we can do about those specifics. Although sometimes what happens is, as you look at this exercise, you start to bring things from out of control into influence, because you start to think of ways that you might be able to influence them. And this can be really helpful with resilience, because worrying about things that we can't control is detrimental to people's kind of stress levels. But also starting to control things and influence things helps our sense of self-efficacy, which is a really important part of being resilient, that idea that we can do something about the situation that we're in.
Yes, and I think that's right, because social work does take place in difficult work environments, and that's not just the office. That's also when we're out working in clients' homes, in different neighbourhoods. There's all sorts of difficult environments that social workers encounter. But there's a lot that we can do to influence and improve them. And I think the challenge for us is to take care of ourselves in the environment so that we can keep working with integrity. Children and adults and families that we work with need us to be reflective. They need us to be able to see that we can positively influence the environment around us, because that helps them think about how they can positively influence the environment around them. We need to actually project optimism about the control and influence that we have on our own lives and on other people's, and we need to take that out into the homes that we visit, because a lot of time actually we're trying to project helpfulness and hopefulness in those home environments. And it's interesting to me, I have a friend who has a very, very busy life, and she has quite a few children, and she also works. So lots of stuff happening in her house, and her house is perhaps smaller than it would like to be, which is for us a lot of the time. Whenever she comes to my house, where I have not much happening really and only one child, she always sits down with a cup of tea and she goes, "It's so peaceful here." And she's really struck by that home environment, that different home environment. And when I go to her place, I get full of energy and ideas and all sorts of things. So actually we're taking environmental cues all the time. And the people that we work with want to know that they can be in control of their own lives, their own environments, make their own choices, and that those choices will be good ones. And so that's kind of what we're trying to carry out there.
Yeah, and a lot of that is about the right environment for the thing that you're trying to do, isn't it? So we had a couple of questions for people to reflect on. One of them is, what language do I use to describe my working environment? And the other is, what does my office or my workspace say about me? Okay, thanks very much.
See you later, Jerry.